Hey, welcome to Dr. Who Podcast. Don't forget to support those that support these podcasts. Keep the wins in the sail of the Corolla Pirate Ship. Click through on the Amazon banner. We've got a lot of great people that support us here. That Hydrolite, I've been behind them forever. They're as good as IV therapy if you need rehydration, particularly those effervescent tablets. I wanted to invent that product, and lo and behold, they have it. And check it all out. And do check out the opiate series, too, at doctor.com. We're putting it in as a weekly infusion. And we interview give you not only the audiobook of the chapters we have up there at doctor.com, but also I put in interviews with people that are really, you know, pertinent, historically pertinent to the topics at hand. All right, let's get some calls. This is Cecilia. What's Cecilia? 28.
Can you hear?
Hey there.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. What's up?
So I just wanted to talk about surviving R. Kelly.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, what I wanted to say was I think, you know, there's a lot of adult failing here. I think the adults in R. Kelly's life failed him, and it's not to make an excuse for his behavior. And I think that the women, I think the adults in their lives failed them.
Okay, so let's look at that. 14-year-old. Let's look at that a little bit. So, So in this, there was recently, I guess, there was some information that he was sexually abused as a teenager. Do you mean that?
Yes.
And there may have been
Well, that he was sexually abused as a teenager, and clearly he didn't get any help
right.
for it.
Right.
I met R. Kelly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I met him, and when I met him, I wanted to give him a hug because it's obvious if you have eyes that see. And I'm not saying that sees only what's in front of you.
Yep.
You can see the pain in his eyes. You can see that he's a man that's hurting. You can see he's a man that needs a hug, that needs help. And it's unfortunate that this is what happens when you don't get help.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And so that's sad. In and of itself, it's sad.
And then
it's
for
no
the
excuse.
For the no, it's just an explanation. And then for the women, we have parents that were sort of co-signing the behavior. And go ahead.
I think the parents. I have, you know, as I watched the six parts, I just kept asking, where are the parents? Where's the adult?
Yeah.
Where's the guardian? Where is anybody? Where is somebody? I think back when I was 14 years old, well, I would never be at an R. Kelly concert. I would be at home doing homework and about to eat dinner and go to bed. You know,
yeah.
So it's like, who's raising these kids? You know, who's teaching them about self-esteem and boundaries and this is right and that's wrong and you don't go there and if this happens, this is what you... So there's a lot that, you know, I'm not a parent, but I hope that parents that were watching, especially with their girls and even with their sons, like, what are you teaching your sons about self-respect and what a woman is and how to treat a woman and what to say to her and what not to say to her and don't touch her there and... You know what I'm saying? So I think
there are a lot of conversations
that we need to have.
The kids that are sort of targets for this kind of manipulation, victimization, don't exactly have the most involved parents. I mean, that's why they're good targets.
I know that.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah, I know. And so for me, as a woman of the Black community, that now says to me and to us that we need to have some different conversations because that is something – you know, broken homes in our community, it's a problem,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, you've got kids raising themselves. You know, there was a time when grandmothers were 60 and 70. Grandmother today could be as young as 22 years old.
Yep.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so now we have to peel back the layers of the onion and go, okay, wait, what is going on here? What do our homes look like? Why do they look this way? Where's the father? Why is grandmother 22? These and those are hard conversations, and unless you're willing to have the hard conversations and answer the hard questions and ask the hard questions, I don't know that you begin to fix this in any way so that this doesn't continue.
And it has to be for within the community. I mean, it can't come from outside. It's got to be within.
Right. It has to be within the community, and that's my concern because if in any problematic situation, a relationship, a marriage, a breakdown, you have to have the hard conversations if you're going to put the train back on the track. And right now the train is off the track, and I don't know how it's going to get back on unless we have these conversations.
Now,
and that's
here's another
concerning thing.
I'm so glad you're willing to be open to solutions and thinking about this. Another friend of mine, I had this conversation today with her on the radio, Areva Martin. She's an attorney, civil rights attorney. And she – I hope –
I know her.
Okay. Areva's fantastic. And she said because we – I forget what we asked. We asked something about how anyone – why people are – I know what it was. It was that his records had surged and a lot of online discourse was defending him. And Areva said, you know, there's sort of a thing with African-American women that their first reaction is to support and protect African-American men that are being attacked or accused of things because they've been accused inappropriately of so much and mistreated so much throughout throughout the history of this country. What do you have to say about that?
I think that is true. I think there is some truth to that. But I think that – I don't know that – yeah, you know, like you said, his sales went up. I don't know that it was the African American community necessarily that was responsible for that.
No, I know.
I think that might have been.
He makes good music.
You know, but to your point, though, we are raised to, because I can think about my Caribbean culture.
Yeah.
You protect men, you know?
Which is, that's interesting.
If a man slaps a woman, it's like, oh, no, that didn't happen. We don't want him to get in trouble.
Right.
You know, but the woman would get in trouble for saying something about it.
Well, and some of it, and Cecilia, some of it is, I'm reading Frederick Douglass's biography right now, Prophet of Freedom, and he's fantastic. And it just reminded me as I read, I just think to my, before all this happened to R. Kelly and before I had this conversation with Areva, I was just thinking, oh my God, African American women are the reason this Holocaust was survived. It's the strength of the women, breathtaking trauma and the strength of these women, and you're still doing it. You're still doing it.
Yeah.
And so if there's going to be a change, my suspicion is it's got to come from the Cecilias of the world. That's where it's going
to
change.
Well, it has to. It has to. You know, I come from Caribbean culture, right? And in my culture, if a man does something, you know, that's inappropriate, you know, he snatches a woman, he hits her, you know, within that family, it's like, don't say anything.
Well, yeah, first,
you
know, don't,
when
it
you're
does
a child,
still, right. Your first
you,
thing is stay, we saw,
anything,
we,
but then when you become an adult, you're like, wait a minute, that was wrong. I'm saying something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And so I think that it has to get to that place. And that's why I said, as we're raising our children, what are we teaching our sons? Those of you that have parents, what are you teaching your sons? What are you teaching your daughters about self-respect, about dignity, about how a man speaks to a woman, about what a woman does when a man disrespects her, whether it's verbally or physically or emotionally? Like, what are we teaching our kids?
Yep.
Because that's where it starts. If I am a child and I'm disrespected and nobody comes to me and says, hey, Cecilia, that right there that he did to you, that's wrong. Don't ever let that happen again. If that happens to you again, this is how you respond. If nobody does that for me, then I'm going to continue to go through life with this pattern of behavior.
Yep.
And I just know that from my community, and these are conversations that I want to have. Like, I take the microphone and start it. If people were willing to have the conversation,
you're doing it right now, and you're also talking about the health of families, which I think is a very important conversation. So good for you. Good for you.
Absolutely.
Keep going.
This is where it starts in the family.
Keep going, Cecilia. Keep going. Don't stop here tonight. Keep going. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, I really appreciate you calling. Hopefully, people hear this. Thanks so much. That Cecilia. Now let's go to Cindy. Go ahead, Cindy.
Hi, Dr. Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm a little nervous to talk to you, but I wanted to call in and thank you for inspiring me to be successful and finally quitting smoking.
That's what I'm talking about. How'd you do it?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So hard.
You know, I listened to you and I listened to Adam, and I just kept hearing you talk about addiction and support groups.
Yeah.
And I don't know, something finally clicked in me one day, and I thought, it's the support group that I'm missing.
Yeah.
And I found an online support group.
Oh, it's awesome.
I don't know if you want me to mention the name.
Go ahead. I just love the idea that online support groups work. And we're trying to figure out how to make them work. So this is big news to me that you found success with that. So good for you.
Oh, I feel like it saved my life. And I've tweeted you about it, but it's called QuitNet.
Quitnet.com. Got it.
And it's a free, it's like Facebook for people who quit smoking.
Yep.
And I had smoked from when I'm 46 now, and I started when I was probably 13. My dad was an alcoholic, and he smoked heavily, and I used to steal his cigarettes, and I got hooked and just smoked. I was smoking two packs a day for most of my life, and so I joined QuitNet, and it's a support group of people who are all in it together. Everybody's either preparing to quit or in the process, and you can just go on there 24 hours a day and find support and people who understand what you're going through. And I spent so much time on there, and I cried and I hit a punching bag and I did all the stuff that like the heroin addicts go through.
Yeah.
And
except it's I'm so excited. Brains heal other brains. Brains cure other brains. That's the message here. And here you are, living proof.
Oh my God, it's amazing. And I go through day after day, and I don't even think about smoking. And when I first thought about quitting, I would practically have a panic attack thinking about it. So I want people to know that you can get to the other side of this addiction. And it's possible. It's amazing. You can get to the other side of it. Because you talk a lot about like the more addictive substances. And I just want the smokers out there to realize that these support groups are so important in quitting.
I absolutely agree with you, and well done, and you're living proof and inspiration, and congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, Cindy, thanks so much.
Take care.
All right, you got it. Let's see. This is Mike. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Dr. Drew. How are you?
Good. What's happening?
Not much. I just had a question for you. You mentioned your opiate series at the top, and I've read a little bit about it. Very interested in it. I'm just wondering how many people you've actually encountered that have quit opiates on their own.
Well, it depends what you're talking about. I mean, I've seen people who were overprescribed and went down the rabbit hole and started feeling dependent. But they didn't get it. They weren't addicts per se. They were dependent. They were having increasing pain. They were having some behavior problems and things. Their life was getting out of control. And they eventually realized the drugs were part of the problem, and they just stopped. I've seen that. 15 years ago, I never saw that because an average person would never get exposed to opiates until doctors started overprescribing. So I have seen that, but I've never seen an addict stop on his or her own.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess I would kind of classify myself into the second category and, pretty much stopped using them on my own.
Well, let's see what happens. Good. Are you using anything else?
No. I mean, I drink like beer or whatever. I just casually, but I don't use any other drugs. And then that was, that's been 12 years now. So, it's not like there's a, I have the urges that it wasn't a straight line. You know, it took 5-6 years of, sort of falling back. And then eventually you just kind of make the choice that, hey, this is not what I want to do. So, it can be done. I'm surprised that you've never seen anybody that's...
not a real addict. It makes me wonder if you're an addict. Because real addicts go back. That's the problem. Staying stopped.
I was pretty far into it for a while.
What were you doing?
A couple years. So anyway.
What were you doing?
I was doing the Vicodins probably 12 a day for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. That's there's something. I'd have to evaluate you, Mike. I don't know you, but my patients have real trouble staying at 12 a day. They go to 30 to 50 a day. And that's when they start doing things, getting better. So the fact you were able to stay at 12 a day and that you were able to stop and you're still drinking but not getting out of control with that. I mean, you have a problem. You have a substance use disorder, but it sounds like it's relatively mild and you have been able to control it, and that's great.
Yeah. Thank you for your input.
Okay. Thanks, man. This is Mary Kay. Mary Kay, what's up?
Oh, wow. I didn't know I was going to be next. I'm like bawling with all these stories. You have a real case on your hands right now, Dr. Drew.
Meaning you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every one of those stories just touched me in a way that, like, I can't even explain. The last guy talked about how, and you talked about how, like, he wasn't an addict or addicts just can't stop. And I am, like, living proof that I've done drugs, hardcore drugs, and completely stopped.
But is your diagnosis addiction or is it something else?
My diagnosis is borderline personality disorder.
Okay, well, that's different than addiction, right?
Right, but what I've come to realize is the identity crisis that I suffer from, I mask it with drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
More alcohol than drugs. Mm-hmm. My brother is a drug addict. I watched his drug addiction completely ruin my family. Borderline took me down the wrong path. Thank God something in me switched after I, by the skin of my teeth, graduated high school. I went to college and I became a teacher. And this, I'm 33. I've been teaching for 9 years. Very respected in my career, but my mental state is just not correlating with.
All right, so you've been diagnosed borderline. How old are you?
33.
All right, the symptoms of borderline tend to reduce as you hit sort of your fourth and fifth decades of life. That's good. One of the hallmarks of borderline is having real difficulty in relationships, so you're going to want to keep that to a minimum right now.
Everyone leaves.
That's your perception, and you either pick people that will leave or you will leave them yourself. That's the kind of nature of borderline. You're right. That's the nature of borderline. And my question is, you've been diagnosed. Are you in treatment for it?
I am seeing a psychiatrist, yes.
Okay. Are you getting something called dialectical behavioral therapy?
I was, but the therapist I was seeing didn't necessarily agree with the treatment that I was going for. I've been on antidepressants since I've been 17 when I found my dad's best friend passed away.
You didn't really answer my question. Are you getting dialectical behavioral therapy?
Not at the moment.
Why not?
The therapist I was seeing is anti-marijuana, and I've found that marijuana is the only thing that actually is helping me.
Doesn't seem like it's helping. You don't seem like you're doing that well. So maybe treating yourself.
I'm not.
Right. So maybe treating yourself, if you're going to be treated with marijuana, that should be done by a professional prescribing it. Otherwise, you're treating yourself. And with a complex mental disorder like borderline, the borderline treating herself, I cannot imagine a worse situation.
I am prior to getting diagnosed, I got a DUI, my second DUI.
So you're not listening to me. You treating yourself with a complicated, severe mental health disorder, treating yourself, horrible idea. Horrible idea. So you need to get back to your psychiatrist and take direction so you can get better, right?
Yeah.
Right. So let's do that because dialectical behavioral therapy works. You're on antidepressants. They work a little bit in borderline because there's some mood lability, as you know, with that. But I know of no clinical evidence that on antidepressants with dialectical behavioral therapy that cannabis adds any benefit. Maybe CBD might. But I would be very concerned about you treating yourself. Okay?
I'm concerned about myself too.
I know. Treating yourself. Treating yourself. You need to go to professionals and get properly treated. And it sounds like you have a good relationship with your psychiatrist. So go back to him and her and let's really dig in with that person and know that the two things for borderline, which you've been diagnosed – and it sounds like, you know, the kinds of symptoms you're talking about, mood instability, being affected, you know, you can't screen any of, you know, you hear the stories here that we're talking to today and they overwhelm you. That's kind of a borderline characteristic. You feel too much. And and you have abandonment issues. Okay. This is a common condition, and it has treatments. The treatment is partly mood stabilization, which is the medicine, and then partly dialectical behavioral therapy, which really works. But you got to stay with it. So let's get re-entrenched in your treatment. Let's get back to that that psychiatrist and start listening to what they have to tell you. Hey, of course, you know I love audiobooks. And if there's that growing list you want to read and you never quite get to them, it's always expanding, you don't have time to read them, well, this new sponsor, Blinkist, has solved your problem once and for all. It's the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to their most impactful elements so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes. It's all on your phone. I love it when I'm working out, also in the car. God, sitting in traffic is one way to make that finally productive time. And the Blinkist library is massive, from timeless classes like Think and Grow Rich to current bestsellers like Fire and Fury. 5 million people are using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. Get started today. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com. That's Blinkist.com/Drew to start your 7-day trial for free and get these books going immediately. That is Blinkist.com/Drew to start your 7-day free trial. It's pretty exciting stuff. Expand your mind, Blinkist.com/Drew. Well, if you like my show, you're going to love Mama Said with Jamie Sigler and Jenna Paris on the new Lady Gang Network on Podcast One. Join Jamie Sigler and musicians Jenna Paris as they use their experience in motherhood to help you confess your mommy sins, realize you're not alone, and feel like you're killing the mommy game. Download Mama Said every Wednesday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Everyone agrees, of course, that probiotics are important, but here's some shocking facts. According to Naveen Jain, a billionaire and founder of Viome, it's an at-home test that measures gut bacteria count, almost no probiotics show up in people's gut analysis. That means that 99% of probiotics out there do not colonize the way they claim. Still, research shows we need the best possible gut bacteria to fight the bad ones. And the solution, I'm excited to tell you about a single-strain proteolytic probiotic called P3OM. That's right, P3OM uses a patented natural process to upgrade a well-researched probiotic strain. The result is a new super strain that some people call the Navy SEAL of probiotics. The P3OM patent proves this, that it's proteolytic. In your body, P3OM super strain doubles every 20 minutes and helps get rid of the bad bacteria before it's safely eliminated. To see it in action, go to p3om.com/Drew. That is p3om.com/Drew. And watch it dissolve a piece of raw steak. That's right. Try P3OM risk-free today. They have the best guarantee I've seen in the industry. It's a 365-day full money-back guarantee. If you don't find P3OM the most potent probiotic you've ever taken, their support team will give you all your money back, no questions asked, up to 365 days after you buy it. When you go to p3om.com/Drew, just be sure to enter the coupon code Drew, and you'll get an extra 20% discount. Again, that is p3om.com/Drew. Discount code Drew. Well, 60 seconds, right? That's how long this commercial will last. And you can do, during that 60 seconds, get a cash offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, do a few sit-ups, listen to this promo about TrueCar, you could get your true cash offer. And best of all, you get to do it from your smartphone. Right when you're at home or wherever you are, just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate. And, of course, your license plate number and code. And you will get, of course, your license plate number, and you will get a few details on your car. You'll then answer a few questions, and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It is that easy. After that, you can bring your car in. They'll check it out with you together. You can ask some questions if you wish, and you'll get the answers you need. There are no surprises, and you can trade in the car as well. You can either get the true cash or get a true cash trade-in. And, of course, you can lock in a price for an actual vehicle that True Car certified dealers allow using True Car. And that price, of course, is a true price, including fees and accessories, for a real vehicle on that True Car certified dealer's lot. Then you will simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today.
Let's talk about CBD. It's pretty much everywhere today, and it's a topic that I get asked about a lot. And my bottom line on CBD is that there are way more claims than hard scientific evidence just yet. But many people are using it and reporting great results, and that's very encouraging. I want to first define exactly what we're talking about here. CBD, or cannabidiol, is an extract from hemp. And while you might associate it with marijuana and cannabis, this particular product does not cause reward activation. So it does not appear to cause any addiction and does not make people high either. Now, there's a ton of products on the market today. Forgetting the vast array of reported health benefits, it's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD. It's an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is clearly described so you can make an informed decision without all the promises that sound too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD are very compelling, and I'm excited to see how things develop as the science catches up with this booming industry. If you want to try, you're ready to try CBD, I encourage you to check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That is my site, drdrew.com/SELECT. And for a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout with the code DrDrew, DrDrew. If you or someone you care for is dealing with addiction, you know that finding a treatment option that works for you can be extremely frustrating. Truth is, every patient's needs are different and constantly evolving. People behind the True Recovery Program in Orange County, California, realized that effective care cannot be one size fits all. They developed a comprehensive range of treatments that can address all facets of drug and alcohol addiction and co-occurring disorders. True Recovery's master-level clinicians maintain small caseloads, allowing them to personalize their care. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient, always with a holistic approach and a focus on accountability. As patients become ready, True Recovery offers assistance with life and coping skills, school and vocational coordination, which is rarely included in treatment and so necessary, as well as community reintegration support. I've spoken to True Recovery's medical director, and I've been impressed with their range of therapeutic modalities and psychiatric services. Their experienced team is well-equipped to manage patients at all levels of care. To request information on how True Recovery can provide you with the personalized care you need, go to drdrew.com/true. Again, that is my website, drdrew.com/TRUE.
Let's talk to, thanks, Mary Kay. Jonathan, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, Dr. Drew?
How are you doing tonight? I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing great, man. Really, I'm just kind of curious. Like, I deactivated all my social media except for Twitter a couple of months ago, and it's just like everybody's spewing hate now, man. Like, I mean, instead of all this, you know, it's like media's pushing for more, you know, diversity and, you know, putting everybody in these separate categories. And I think it's like the old tactic, divide and conquer. Like, you divide everybody into the most manageable, you know, groups that you can, and that stops the majority from ever rising up against you. So I just kind of want to know what's your take on that.
Well, like, divide and conquer. Hold on. Divide and conquer. So who can get control?
I don't know. The powers that be, I don't really know who it is. I mean, to be honest, because, I mean, the government, you know, they're the government. Everything's red tape. Everything takes 10 years to achieve. So, I mean, I don't really know if it's the government or not. But, I mean, it just seems to me like there's got to be some sort of agenda. Like, why are they pushing for, you know, everybody to be in a, you know, a specified group instead of, you know, accept each other's, you know, diversity and accept this and accept that instead of, you know, male privilege and white privilege and, you know, Islamophobia and all that different stuff. Like, I mean, where's all that going?
I'm not sure I'm following. You're sort of asking a lot of questions, and your questions, I mean, what if it were just the case that for whatever reason we've hit a stage where I you know, but Gary, come back in here. When are you going to put up that podcast with the last interview we did?
Brandon Novak.
The neuroscientist. Darren.
The one we just Darren did. Schreiber, Darren Schreiber. I can put it up. It will be up before this.
Okay. So keep an eye out for Darren Schreiber, where we talk about what's going on in social psychology and what's going on in neuropsychology that explains these trends and why we may have ended up in this situation. I think it's a function, much of anything else, of how our families have been, I think. We sort of have a narcissistic turn where we're all envious and we're all thinking in black and white terms, and and somehow the current administration sort of inflamed some of that, and we think it's just going to get better by itself. That's his and my opinion. It will get better.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could see that. I mean, I've been through that myself, man. Like, I had my whole childhood, my parents were alcoholics. I spent 15 years after that, trying to lock down a family with different chicks just to have families with them, you know, like, because I didn't feel like I was a part of my own, you know, that sort of thing.
And did you
relate to that?
And were you feeling envious and angry and aggressive and all this kind of discontent? Right?
All that, man.
Yeah.
All
so
that.
I think...
felt all that. And I mean, it was about a year ago that I actually stopped to, you know, break down my narcissistic kind of, I guess, attributes, you could say.
Yeah.
To start working towards something better.
Good for you.
Because I realized, I mean, you know, you can be smart. I used to think I was smart, but Jeopardy smart doesn't mean wise.
Right.
You know, like, right. I mean, just because you know a bunch of things don't mean you're intelligent about life.
Or you don't have wisdom or knowledge. You know, we good for you for knowing that difference. Good for you, man.
I appreciate that, man.
Well, keep thinking about this stuff. Keep thinking about
it. One
thing, Jonathan, wait.
My fiance, man, she's caught in between a situation with her dad and her mom. Like, okay, we've been together for almost 4 years now, but this past year, and that's kind of where my whole, like, finding myself sort of came from, because I thought maybe I was partially the cause of that situation. And maybe to some extent I did maybe push her in that direction, but her dad and her mom, her stepmom, after 30 years of marriage, split up. Well, she found out that this ideological stepmom that she's always worshipped turned out to be not so great, you know, and then she cleaned up after her dad, did everything, like literally there every single day, and with two kids. You know, they're every single day taking care of all of his wants and needs because he couldn't man up. And I know I say man up, and that might sound like masculine or anything or everything, but you know what I mean. Like, he didn't want to take responsibility for his own actions and stuff that he might have done to cause the situation. You know, kind of self-reflect. Everything was her fault.
Okay.
Well, after 6 months, then her mom called, and she was like, okay, I'm going into my 14th surgery. 14th. How she's got a doctor that's still working on her, I have no idea. Yeah. But 14 surgeries, and, I mean, man, she's just taking care of her hand and foot and dragging two kids along in the process. Now, mind you, these kids are not biologically mine. They're not. But, I do love her, and I love her enough to love all the parts of her and all that good stuff. I mean, I know the research and psychology. I've looked all that up in your podcast between single parents and all that stuff, but or single motherhood, I should say. But on the flip side of that, I've given it a try, you know.
Okay.
But how do you tell someone that you're making the wrong choices? Because she told me the other day, instead of helping people, I'm hurting them telling them the truth.
Give me specifically what she was talking about.
I told her she's making the wrong decision, that she needs to live life for herself, that her mother's never going to be in a situation that she can completely take care of herself because she's 50-something years old and has relied on men to take care of her whole life. I've told her, you know, I see more potential in you than what you're exercising. You're a great person, awesome person, could do a million and one things in the world, but you're letting the two people whose opinions value the most. I mean, I know that from, you know, listening to you and your psychology and all that. It's like they're letting her know she's not good enough but to be a housemate, pretty much.
So here's the deal. She, for whatever reason, however you delivered that, she couldn't hear it. It probably hurt too much. And certainly...
It did.
Okay,
it
so
did.
You're right.
I'm listening. I'm sorry for cutting you off.
You're right to tell her these things. You're correct. And it's unfortunate she couldn't hear it. And certainly you should... She needs a lot of building up because she's been terribly torn down by people. So for you to tell her about all the potential you see in her and how it hurts your feelings to see her not fulfilling that for herself, definitely she would hear that. But the rest of it, you're going to have to use a sort of a backdoor means, something called wonderment, and go, I wonder why, lots of questioning, and let her answer the question rather than you telling her how things are. Like, I wonder why that feels so bad. Why would you do that? Or why would your mom do this to you? Just use wonderment a lot, and you'll be amazed. Even if she knows that you're sort of trying to get at these issues, people can't resist sort of explaining to themselves what they're doing, and they will get to an insight that way. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That makes perfect sense. And, yeah. I mean, I've tried that to an extent. Well, yeah. The past, I guess, 2 weeks, I've kind of stepped away.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't talked to her at all on the phone or anything.
At a certain point.
Back from the situation because it wasn't going in, it's not going in a healthy direction.
Right.
So
at a certain point.
Me
right.
stepping away so she can realize it on her own is the best thing, or should I continue to let her know that I'm there for it to be the best thing?
You can't save her. She can't hear you anymore. At a certain point, you got to take care of yourself. But yes, tell her you're available. I would definitely do that. Okay?
Okay.
All right,
okay,
Charlie.
Man. I appreciate
right, man.
It, Dr.
Good luck,
have a good
man.
Night.
Call me back when you get some progress. Let me know. Oof. Raphael, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good.
I have a gigantic problem in my personal life, and I don't know how to get out of it.
Okay.
I've been married for 10 years. I have 2 children. And I just recently got involved emotionally and sexually with a woman that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been unfaithful a few times before, but it's always been, I've always had emotional boundaries. It was mostly lust, being expressed. But this is different. I fucked up. I have feelings for this person. And
is it enough to harm your children?
I'm sorry?
Are these feelings powerful enough that you're going to have to harm your children?
See, here's the problem. Before I got married, I had four or five relationships, you know, emotional relationships with women. And in every case, when those ended, whether it was by my own volition or theirs, I went through this deep, horrible crisis full of anxiety and depression where I almost got obsessed, you know, with them and the fear of being abandoned
right.
and left.
Okay.
It's and I forgot I had this problem because I haven't been in that situation for 10 years since I've been in this relationship with my wife. So I don't know how to get out of this, and I'm afraid that if this decision is made either by me or by this girl, it's going to be painful for me. I forgot that I had that tendency, and I don't know what to do, man.
Can you find a higher purpose in trying to keep your family together?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Yeah, yes, I can.
So you have to let that.
And I love my wife.
You have to let that priority be the motivation that makes you willing to go through whatever discomfort you have to go through to end your addiction to this person. I mean, this is addiction, right?
It is?
Yeah, it's a kind of an addiction. You can't, you know, you have a full withdrawal when you get off. And I mean, it's one way of conceptualizing what this is. And you have to go cold turkey. You have to break the addiction to this person. And I'm sure you had some abandonment issues growing up or something that sort of set you up that gets re-triggered. But understand those are old tapes. That's something that happened to you as a child. You're a husband. You're a father. You have responsibilities. You are fucking up big time. And you need to do what you got to do to protect your family, even if it means you have to take a couple knitting pins in the eyeball. Right?
I'm very, very fascinated by what you're saying because I do have addictive – I don't think I'm an addict, but I do sometimes feel like I rely on – or I have relied in the past on substances to get through certain things.
Well, look at this. Conceptualize it as a drug that you have to stop cold turkey. And you have to get away from the drug. You have to stop it. And there will be a withdrawal period. And it will get better.
That's fascinating. I'm really sad. And, you know, I've struggled in the past couple of years with depression and anxiety,
mm-hmm.
and it's just everything is This is complicating my life so much.
Yeah, you don't need to do this. You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't be doing this. It's not you. You're not that guy. But you're whatever's going on with you psychologically or with your substances, whatever, you've become that guy. And if you can't deal, get some psychotherapy. Get somebody to sit in your corner with you, right? I mean, that's what therapy does, give you the support we need other brains. We need support to carry things through certain things. And particularly if you're dealing with an addiction or dealing with old abandonment injuries and all this stuff that is in your wiring and it's making your brain unable to do what it needs to do to be who you are and who you need to be, then you get some support for that. It's not you're not being it for long. It's not really expensive. All right, Rafael, good luck, man. Do it. It's all. Do it. John, what's going on?
Hey, Doc, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I was wondering, love your workout. Love seeing that you've changed your body so much. Was wondering, is there any place I can get your keto diet?
I do another podcast called Swole Patrol at my website, drdrew.com, and we talk an awful lot about that stuff there. The pods I do with me, Mike Catherwood, and then Mark Bell, the ones where he's the guest, you might see us talking about that. We also talked to Sean Baker, who is the brains behind the carnivore diet.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So sorry, wasn't that right here on this podcast?
Did I do Sean Baker here?
We did the guy who had the maybe not. We had the guy that had that green, the book, the healthy plant or something.
The plant paradox. No, different that was guy? Different. That's different. Sean Baker, and I know it was on Swole Patrol because I was on the phone during that interview, and I did it for that particular podcast.
I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, buddy. Check it out. I mean, I only do the carnivore thing. It's Vinny Tortorich. It's also his stuff, which is no starch, no sugars. No carbohydrates. I keep it really simple. I'm just not capable of measuring my food and all that kind of stuff. I have appetite problems, and so I have to have something that also manages that. So I just keep it simple, and that's why I've sort of gone the Vinny Tortorich way. And he's pissed at me for not having done so sooner.
Okay.
So there you go.
Well, thanks again.
All right, John.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Goodness. I feel bad for Rafael. I mean, you know, if you want to complicate your life, do stuff like what Rafael was doing. And you hear the pain in his voice, right? It's not like he's a bad guy. He has all these experiences that he goes down these slippery slopes where he can't not use, which is the person that he's involved with. And then once he gets strung out on her, then he's in the addictive phase. And again, we can argue all day about whether there is such thing as love addiction or sex addiction. I just find it a useful construct, and as you see with him, it sort of resonated for him. Christy, what's happening?
Hi, Dr. Drew.
Hey there.
I don't know really where to start, but I've suffered from depression my entire life since, I don't know, age 12. And so, you know, now I'm in my 40s and things have been okay for the past 5 or 6 years until just recently. And I don't know, it's like the bottom fell out again.
Did something precipitate it?
No, not really.
Doesn't have to.
Medication just stopped working. And I've looked into TMS?
Mm-hmm. Which is the magnetic effect on the brain. I mean, it's like a shock therapy with magnets. It's very, very cool.
Right. And there is a place in town that does that, but it just seems there's a lot of requirements for insurance, and it seems an overwhelming task to...
Well, but I'm sure everything feels overwhelming to you now when you're depressed. That's a feature of depression, isn't it?
Right.
Is anybody treating you?
I know you're going to hate this, but my primary care doctor.
Well, I don't hate it. I mean, at least there's somebody looking after you. And doesn't he or she want you to see a psychiatrist?
No, I haven't really talked to her about this latest phase.
Well, that's the first thing to do, right?
Right. I'm taking Cymbalta and Wellbutrin.
Okay.
And have been for, she changed from Lexapro to Cymbalta about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't seem like it's working at all.
Listen, you may need a much more sophisticated combination of medication. I mean, there's a lot of other options these days. I mean, the mood stabilizers, and they're using a lot of Abilify, and you know, you're on a reasonable combination and it's not working. So you need to really get back in the hands of an expert and see what can be done. And as you're investigating, you know, things like TMS, those sorts of magnetic treatments of the brain, those are interesting and useful, and maybe a psychiatrist would agree with that. But first, you've got to get a proper assessment.
Right. I don't know how to voice what I'm going through to my friends and family, because the the thoughts that I have are scary.
I bet.
And I think that they would be angry.
Who would be?
Like my husband.
If they knew you were thinking this way, or if you were to do something to yourself?
If he knew that I even thought about it.
Oh, well, that's, feeling worthless and persecuted, again, that's all part of depression. If your husband gets angry with you for being so depressed you're thinking suicidally, there's something we got to educate your husband, because that's not right. I'd be hard-pressed to believe that would be true. But it's neither here nor there. The fact is your mood has become unstable. People that have depression have an over 50% probability of having a recurrence. You're having a recurrence. The medication you're on, reasonable combination of medicine, not working. So now it's time to get an opinion, an expert opinion. It's pretty simple.
So I guess nothing seems simple when you are in this state
when you
of mind.
That's correct, when you feel so bad. But you got to do it.
So would I start, just find my own psychiatrist or contact my primary care?
Well, ideally, you want the primary care, and you need to make you may have to make a strong pitch and say, you know, this is really not working. I'm very unstable, and I would like to see a psychiatrist. That's it. And if your primary care person does not allow that, then I would be insistent. I would just say, look, you got to refer me to somebody, or I'm going to find somebody myself.
Right.
Okay. Please, you understand it's just because of the state you're in, right? That you're so negative and you're feeling this way, and it gets better. It always gets better. But how much misery do you have to go through before you get the proper care? And I don't want to see you go through any more. But let's get it done right away. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Christine. Okay? Do that.
Thank you.
Commit to me. Commit to me. You will do it. Say it.
I will do it.
Okay. Well, I look forward to you feeling better, and you call me when you do, okay?
Thank you.
Right, bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Drew.
All right. Gary, how you doing?
I'm well. How
everything good? I'm good.
I'm good.
Interesting group of calls today.
Yeah, there was a lot of range.
Range, yes, range.
I liked the guy who wanted to talk about, the divisiveness. I thought he was maybe didn't have all his ideas fully formed. But
he was an interesting guy, yeah.
I liked where his head was at.
Me too. I liked Cecilia from Brooklyn.
She was great.
And I like Christy, and I even like poor Raphael, man. That guy was right there.
That one was real tough because he clearly, you could tell from his voice, I don't, you know.
Both he's suffering.
And on the screening call, I mean, he's in it, so I feel for him.
Well, we thank you all for calling. We thank you all for listening, as always. Go to doctor.com. Check out that opioid series. I swear to God, it's so good. And all those interviews we're dropping in there. And all the family of pods that we have there. And, don't forget, me and Adam are still together. So we'll check that out as well. And I will see you next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's DRDREW Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.